Me and Sam are about to play Speeduno, unless John wants to come over here. We've been sitting here this whole time, and I'm just like, why haven't we been playing Uno? I just bought this. I bought this. It's been sitting in my car, waiting for the right moment to strike.
And apparently, as we are starting a podcast, is the right moment.
Well, who says we're starting a podcast?
Run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like, and this week we watched The Grand Budapest Hotel. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
It is Samuel.
It's me, Tyler.
It's John. I've usurped Russell.
Yeah, Russell's not with us today. He had
he died.
Well, let's not say that. He is very much alive, but he is off doing other things.
He doesn't love us anymore.
No, apparently not. So, first impressions. I don't think any of us had seen this before, right?
No,
not a single one of us. I don't think.
Yeah, this was recommended by our fellow team member Brett, who was also busy this morning, or else he would have come on and joined us. Yeah, this was not even something I'd ever heard of. I didn't know this movie existed until it was put in the hat. Did any of y'all, had y'all at least heard of this?
Yes.
Yeah, I knew of the name of it. I didn't know anything about it beyond the fact. I remember when it came out that it had a lot of buzz around it.
Yeah.
That's all I knew about it.
Than I thought it did.
2014.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely thought it was newer for some reason. I don't know why I thought that, because Jude Law was clearly younger, but I just kind of ignored that fact, I guess. John, had you heard of this before?
Honestly, not even the name had crossed. I've heard of a bunch of movies that sounded similar to this, but I've never actually heard of the actual movie title itself.
Yeah.
So this is the first time I've heard. Whenever Russell told me, yeah, watching The Grand Budapest, I'm like, Grand Hoodawa?
Yeah, this one, because it has, you know, the name of a hotel, the first thing that came into my head was, this is going to be similar to Bad Times at the El Royale. It was not.
Yeah.
It's called
Bad Times at the El Royale.
Oh, so that's a great movie that we're just...
It's an excellent movie.
We did it on the podcast before, so we're just going to have like a movie night and make you watch that, because that's a fantastic movie.
You know what my entry price is?
Well, I mean, Cynthia Erivo's in this, in Bad Times at the El Royale.
The Cynthia Erivo?
I assume you know who that is, because you're a little musical boy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that's a no.
Nope.
All right. She originated one of the biggest roles in The Color Purple, so she's incredible.
Okay. I actually do know who you're talking about. I just didn't know the name.
She's in that movie. Chris Hemsworth is in that movie. It's another star-studded movie, and it's fantastic.
Wow. John Hamm.
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my. Okay. I will watch it.
A guy who looks so much like Tom Holland and acts like Tom Holland that I kind of thought it was Tom Holland, but it's not.
You're saying Jeff Bridges?
No, a different guy.
I was like, no, he does not.
Jeff Bridges, Tom Holland, you can't tell them apart.
They're identical.
He's got what her name from 50 Shades in it, too.
Oh, Dakota something. Yeah.
Ah.
Except, you know, she's... The thing is, she is good. It's just, she's...
She was in 50 Shades.
We've gone down a rabbit trail. This isn't the 50 Shades podcast.
Or Bad Times at the El Royale.
Go listen to that episode. It's a good episode. but this movie came out in 2014. It was directed and written by Wes Anderson and stars Ralph Fiennes as M. Gustav and Tony Revolori as Zero. You can buy or rent this on Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Prime Video, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, a writer encounters the owner of an aging high-class hotel, who tells him of his early years serving as a lobby boy in the hotel's glorious years under an exceptional concierge. Samuel.
So, our director, Wes Anderson, is very, very well known. He's been nominated and won several Oscars. His most popular films were the movies The Royal Tenenbaums, The Darjeeling Limited, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Isle of Dogs... He actually hasn't done that many movies.
But the ones he's done have all been super, super critically acclaimed.
Yes.
He also wrote this movie. The guy who wrote it with him, his name is Hugo Guinness, and
I can find almost nothing about him other than that he has worked a bunch with Wes Anderson. He wrote The Royal Tenenbaums with him, and he acted in Fantastic Mr. Fox, and that is essentially it. And, oh, excuse me, he didn't write The Royal Tenenbaums. He worked on artwork for The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, because Wes Anderson is really big this is into, his like, only... the artwork for his stuff, apparently.
This is his only writing credit ever.
Wow.
Is this, and he... And he got nominated for an Academy Award for it. Yeah. So,
well.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is Wes Anderson and Hugo Guinness.
Well, does anyone have anything they want to say before we jump into the plot for this?
This is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Oh my God, it was so funny.
I didn't think this was a comedy.
I didn't either. I thought it was going to be super, super dramatic. And then they were just, it is geniusly comedic. So well done.
I think if you want to know how to do comedy correctly without, like, going overboard or oversaturating it, this movie is a prime example of how to do comedy correctly.
I knew a lot about Wes Anderson before seeing this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, I have never seen a Wes Anderson movie.
Okay.
I am a huge, huge fan of watching movie breakdowns for movies I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm. No, I do the same thing.
I don't know why, but I do. And... one of my favorite movie reviewers, movie content people on YouTube is Movies with Mikey. And he did an episode on the Grand Budapest Hotel, and I've seen it a few times, but it was a long time ago. And he's just a huge Wes Anderson fan. A lot of people are, because it's very artistic, and I've always made a mention to see a movie, and I haven't. So this is my first introduction to it, and I can say without question, this is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't necessarily surprised that it was good based on all of the hype surrounding Wes Anderson, but I was shocked at just how much it resonated with everything I want to see in a movie.
Yeah.
And it was like... It was like a drug. I was so hooked from the beginning. It was everything I wanted. It was absolutely hilarious. The whole gentleman aesthetic, everything they did with the cinematography was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. The camera work was phenomenal. Like, I adore
the different movie. Just like it really mastered the art of, well, we said it, comedic timing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's timing. Knew exactly how to, like, make something go just long enough, whether it's a pause before something happens or just an action, to make it funny and no longer and no shorter. Like, it was exactly that.
British humor.
Yes.
It was very British humor, where the comedy doesn't necessarily come from the jokes or from the ridiculousness or any of that as much as it comes from just... the situation and the timing and the fact that everyone plays it straight.
And the absurdity of certain moments.
Exactly. Yes.
Like the moment where the guy just goes up and says, good luck, and slaps Zero in the face and then walks away. No explanation, and no one reacts to it and just moves on. It's that like absurd behavior that's just so funny.
A lot of people equate Wes Anderson's filming style with he is the embodiment of whimsy, and I think that is very accurate in this movie specifically.
I can't speak
for his other works. But it is such a blend of that comedic timing, that absurdity, but also that realism. Like, one of my favorite aspects about this movie is that he's able to match this whimsical, absurdist kind of set circumstances, and he sprinkles in subtly actual real themes and serious beats that... You may not catch it up front, but when you look back on it like 5 minutes after that beat has passed, you're like, whoa, that was actually really heavy. Oh my God. And then the way he ended the movie, it's just like, Jesus Christ. One of the guys that I watched on YouTube just talking about Wes Anderson was saying his wife said that he makes you feel all the feels.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's very, very accurate.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing with this movie was, you know, I kept sitting there and it really was about four stories going on at once, like within each other. Mm-hmm. It was like you opened up a book, character in a book opens up a book, character in that book opens up a book, and now you're reading the inner story. It kind of reminded me a little bit of a more convoluted Big Fish That's a pretty good comp. Big Fish is very good. It's a Ewan McGregor movie.
It is really good.
Very good.
Well, the first we watched, I think it was actually...
Adam came on for that one.
Yeah, it was one of our first guests.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, the story, it tells the story of the older Jude Law character telling the story of a younger Jude Law talking to Zero, who's telling the story of his childhood.
Well, and all of that is placed in...
In a book.
In the girl on the front reading the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically, as I was watching it, I was like, this is essentially... He has written out and put into a movie... the reader's journey, which is the reader is not the story. Mm-hmm. The reader is just like this woman, and she cracks open a book in front of the grave of the person who wrote it,
mm-hmm.
and then inside the author, like I took it as his moment in the beginning where he's making that video was the about the author
mm-hmm.
that you read at the beginning, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, look at that, it's the preface, and then you skip. And then it's like, okay, this was me as a young person, you know, that's like maybe the foreword or something. Then you flip and you're starting the story. And it's like when, you know, when he's a young concierge and everything. And like by the end, it pulls you all the way back out of all four of those little windows. And then she just closes the book. And I'm like, that was just, ugh, it was such a great representation of that.
So two fun things before we like really dive into the actual plot.
Mm-hmm.
First... Framing is one of the central cores of this entire movie.
Yeah.
This entire movie has to do with frames. One of the first things that Samuel mentioned was what's with the aspect ratio. Yeah.
Well, and it changes up during the course of
the changes.
There are three different aspect ratios, and each aspect ratio is shot in the time period. They use the aspect ratio from the time period of which they're telling the story. So when they go back into where they're telling Zero's story, it's a different aspect ratio. When it's Jude Law and them talking, different aspect ratio. When it's modern... And it's the girl reading the book, different aspect ratio.
Yeah. I didn't even notice that.
I didn't either.
I noticed that it was changing up, but I didn't.
Yeah, but I didn't clock that was the reason. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And every time it changes time period, it changes the aspect ratio, which is awesome. Mm. When you look at the, I had to look this up, the mise-en-scene, or what's in front of the camera, and like it's kind of like the tableau for theater, like the big picturesque kind of thing. Wes Anderson is fantastic at like symmetrical shots and just gorgeous, like minimalistic kind of shots. But one of the biggest through lines throughout this entire movie is framing, in terms of how the aspect ratio is framing the movie,
mm-hmm.
the frame of which the story is being told. That's one of the biggest aspects about the show is the picture, the boy with apple, mm-hmm. which is framed, and they're taking that. Ralph Fiennes' character gets framed. Like, there's a lot of frame symbolism going on throughout this entire movie.
I'm going to correct you real quick. It's Ralph Fiennes.
No, it's Ralph Fiennes.
Whose character are you talking about?
I'm talking about M. Gustav, and it's Ralph Fiennes.
It's definitely Ralph Fiennes.
It's the way it's pronounced, because he's from the UK. It's Ralph Fiennes. I'm telling you. I know his
last name is Fiennes.
It's Rafe.
I thought that his name was Ralph and he went by Ray, but I may be wrong.
It's Rafe Fiennes.
Yep, Rafe Fiennes, yep.
Are you sure?
I'm telling you. I've heard a million people call him Rafe Fiennes.
I've never seen R-A-L-P-H pronounced as anything except Ralph.
I knew his last name was pronounced Fiennes. I thought that he went by Ray, and that's why it was Rafe Fiennes.
Yeah, because that would just make sense.
But no, it Ralph, the way it's spelled... it is pronounced Rafe.
That's so weird.
Yep. It's Rafe.
Interesting. Yep. You learn something new every day.
Exactly. So when you say Rafe Fiennes, instead of saying the two F's, you just say Rafe Fiennes.
You say Ray.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No way. He was married to Riversong. Anyways, moving on.
All right.
So, but yeah, he's really good. He's really good. No, so it's just, yeah, I lost my train of thought. This movie's really good.
No, you're good. The moment that I guess it clicked in for me, this is going to be a movie within a movie within a movie within a movie, was specifically the shot that I can't get out of my head, which was Gustav there with, I think it might have been Zero, and they were turning to like go into another room or something, and it turns, and you know, the guy is doing the voiceover, and three different doors just open, 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 and then the camera like goes through, and it's all just one shot like going through, and I was like, there's that symbolism there of just going through like all these different, like, you know, I guess like you said, frames and stories and everything.
Even small moments, like one of our favorite jokes through the show, which was when Dimitri is just calling Gustav everything but a child of God.
Oh my gosh.
They're super polite. The whole movie goes on, and it's just everyone's super polite and super sweet.
It's the first amount of aggression you get in the whole thing.
Dimitri comes in, you fucking.
There's not even a. I don't even give you a beat. He just hops on it. He's like, you, and I'm like, oh, I love this actor very much, but I wasn't anticipating this level of aggression coming.
It reminded me of that thing you sent me, Tyler, about the vampire, like, having slang from every century.
It reminded me
of that so much. Oh my gosh, it cracked me up. He just jumped up and he just dived. He goes straight into it, mm-hmm. and we're all like, oh.
But we're talking about the whole framing trope throughout this entire thing. So Dimitri runs up on him, and he is just like, you know, he's an adventurer, he's a slag, and you know, he talks up and charms all these old women, and I bet he has sex with them too. And he's like, I always go to sleep with my friends. And he punches him in the face, and then punches him in the face, and then Willem Dafoe punches him in the face. But Willem Dafoe looks at the camera, and then the big circle frames around his face.
And there's
like
a musical theme. Like, yeah. Oh my gosh, it was the funniest thing. Willem Dafoe has never made me laugh so much as in this movie. There is a point where he's standing by. So there were a couple of points where Tyler and John called what Willem Dafoe was what a character was about to do, where Willem Dafoe is standing next to a window holding this like Persian cat and like just watching a scene happen. And then John goes, how funny would it be if he just threw the cat? And then 2 seconds later, Willem Dafoe throws the cat out the window.
Well, not even. I was like, yo, something was really funny about Willem Dafoe petting a cat evilly in a corner. So all I got out of that sentence was, Willem Dafoe holding the cat in the corner. And then immediately he throws it out the window.
And then he just continues on. And Jeff Goldblum is like, did he just throw my cat out a window? And then later he goes to the desk and he has to go to the coat check and retrieve his dead cat in a bag. And as he's walking out, he's walking towards it like a trash can in a very wide shot. And mm-hmm. Tyler's like, don't throw it in the trash can. And then 2 seconds later, don't cat in the trash can.
So this is a quick little side note. I know Danielle knows this, but a couple of months ago, I watched a bunch of Willem Dafoe interviews kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because he was doing, you know, a bunch of marketing for No Way Home and all of that. And I fell in love with him.
Yeah.
That man is now one of my, he's probably top five of my favorite actors. Because he said something which is so rare to hear and I love. He was doing one of those, like, you know, talking about his career and all the movies he's done, like one of those GQ interviews.
Oh, you're talking about where he looked at the camera and said, skedaddle, skadoodle, your dick is now a noodle?
What?
Beg my pardon?
All right, so we're moving on.
It's my favorite Willem Dafoe moment.
All right.
No, I'm done.
You're done?
No. What'd he say?
Moving on.
Oh,
what
Lord.
Did he say?
No.
I hate you so much.
Willem Dafoe in this movie, every time he showed up, was just, it just made me
pure
laugh
chaos.
As he showed up. Because he was that guy who in the, I think it's the Allstate commercials, the mayhem guy.
Yep.
Like, that's yep. who he was. And
same
he had,
energy.
Like, these brass knuckles that he was just always, like, sort of just, like, crunching his hands together. Oh, it was so funny.
Yeah.
Incredible. Oh, I loved him.
Hilarious.
But I'm going to go ahead and dive into this summary here. So, in a cemetery in the former nation of Zubrowska, a young girl visits the shrine of a renowned writer known simply as Author, reading his most cherished book, The Grand Budapest Hotel. The book, written in 1985, recounts his 1968 vacation at the once grand, then drab, hotel. There he meets its owner, Zero Mustafa, who at dinner tells his rags-to-riches story. In 1932, Zero is the newly hired lobby boy at the prestigious Grand Budapest Hotel, which, okay, so I called, as I was looking at his face, because, you know, I've seen this actor and other things, Zero's face, young Zero, and I was looking at him and I was like, his mustache has a reflection.
Mm-hmm.
That's drawn on.
Mm-hmm.
they drew on his mustache. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, well, that's, I guess, just them being lazy, you know? And so I was like, okay, I'm not going to call it out. But then they make it a point later when he's getting ready for his day for him to go up to the mirror and draw on his mustache.
And it's crooked.
And it's so bad. Like he does it terribly and then leaves the room. And I'm just like, okay, so we were supposed to know that it was drawn on and that's hilarious.
Yep. Yep.
Oh my gosh, it was so good.
Look at how small, like, and how skinny that mustache
is. So thin.
Which mustaches were also another, like, very prevalent thing throughout. Because it's all about, like, that, like, World War I, World War II sense of refinement.
Well, because this whole comedy is set right in the point of a war happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring it up a few times and you see, like, even like, little allegories to it, like the zigzag that he's wearing, like a swastika on his arm. Like, there's little jokes with it, and then there's, like, serious moments, like, when he goes, like, you know, like, why are you even here? And he's like, the war. And Zero goes into his whole thing about how he had to leave for this reason, and Gustav's just like, okay.
Well, hold on
and,
for
like,
a moment.
Moves on.
You mean to tell me that you're less of an immigrant and more of a refugee? Well, yes. I take back everything I said. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it was so fun. I loved the character of Gustav so much. He just, it was so funny to me. Like, I knew I was going to love his character when he is sitting with the woman, like when she's like, I don't want to leave, you know, all this stuff. And he's talking to her very seriously. And then he goes, what is this color? And picks up her hands and is like, and she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, this color on your nails is awful. And it's all wrong.
Repulsive.
It's not so much that it's awful as so much as I'm physically repulsed by it.
It was so good.
And she's having like a full blown, like, panic attack about going to this place, and she's just and he's like, he stops her mid monologue, like, well, who did this? This is atrocious.
Oh my gosh, it was so good. That was the moment when I was like, I love this character and I hope he's the main character.
I loved it so much.
Oh,
it just,
so good.
One of the things that I love so much about Gustav is I'm such a sucker for that, like, old-timey sense of, like, gentlemanly refinement, right? And that whole poshness. But when that's blended with my favorite thing in anything, which is self-awareness.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
He's horribly self-aware.
Right.
Like,
and that's
yes.
the best part, right? He's painfully aware of who he is and what he does. And he's like, she leaves, he takes off, and he's just like, she's fantastic in bed, by the way. And he's just like, she was 84. I've had older. All right, you're done.
Oh
you can
gosh.
Leave.
or
when he's on the train, this entire podcast is just going to be us quoting and referencing the movie. But when he's on the train and he goes into this whole, like, you know, humanity has just become a huge band of lawless savages. That's what war brings you. And fuck it. And he just takes a shot.
That's after he just gets manhandled by the Germans.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, it kills me how you see, like, you know, starting from the young writer, Jude Law's little portion, going through and most of the rest of the movie, you get that, like, poshness and everything, and your first hint of it is that scene with older Zero, with Arthur, sitting there. And he brings up the wine, and he does the super smooth, gonna taste it, pour for your guest, pour for you, moving on. And it's like, and if you know anything about, like, you know, fine serving, that's exactly what you do.
Yes.
Is you pour a little bit for the person who ordered it to taste, then you serve everyone, and then you serve the person who ordered it.
Yep.
And it's like, and watching it, I was sitting there like, wow, that was so smooth and quick, but it gives us the exact, like, I guess, sense that we're supposed to have this.
Well, I audibly went when I saw that as being a server for quite some time.
Oh, no, I knew you caught it, too.
Well, because I out loud said, that was slick.
Yeah, it was so smoothly done, like, just so quick.
And it's cool because, like, one of the things that I really, really liked is it showed you the behind the scenes as to, like, when you're at, like, the picture of luxury, the finest resort money can buy, And it's the and it shows you the serving staff and the standards of which they're being held to.
Yeah.
Right? Talking about how the lobby boy, the freaking lobby boy, has to keep all these secrets and expect the guest needs before they even become a thing. And it's just this whole...
Has to, you know, perform the Heimlich when oh, one of the guests so starts
Take
dying.
Over. Take over.
That was so good.
He was dying and he stops to hear the message and then
he goes,
go...
Take over.
Take over.
Higher, higher. Oh, of course, take over. Higher, higher.
So good. I loved that sequence. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Anyway, the movie.
Yeah. Yes. Going on. So Monsieur Gustave H., the hotel's fastidious concierge, seduces old, wealthy clients, including the 84-year-old dowager Madame D., with whom he has a nearly two-decade affair. She mysteriously dies a month after her last hotel visit. Gustave and Zero visit Madame Schloss Lutz's estate, where they encounter surviving relatives for the reading of her will by her attorney, Deputy Vilmos Kovacs, which... Jeff Goldblum, when he popped up as the attorney,
yeah.
He just did such a good job. Oh my gosh.
This was one of the least Jeff Goldblum-y roles he's ever played.
Yes.
He was very subdued, yeah, but yeah. He was still Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the moment when he was Jeff Goldblum was, did he just throw my cat out a window? Like, oh my yeah. gosh, that was
that
so
was always
funny.
The most Jeff Goldblum moment.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, it killed me. Oh my gosh. Well, Kovacs.
Not agreed.
No, Kovacs announces a recent codicil to the will, which bequeaths Boy with Apple, a priceless Renaissance painting, to Gustave. Madame's son Dimitri is outraged and demands Gustave's arrest. Gustave and Zero leave, absconding with the painting for safekeeping. Gustave is later arrested by Inspector Hankels under the suspicion of Madame's murder. He befriends a gang during his imprisonment, and the men plot their escape.
That was we're skipping.
I had no idea, and I don't know what he... It's just because I think I'm so used to seeing him in the, you know, super classy roles and all.
Yeah.
But Ludwig, mm-hmm. however you say his name, the main prisoner guy?
Yeah.
That was mm-hmm. Harvey Keitel.
The Harvey Keitel?
I don't know who that
Y'all are killing
is.
Me today. Who's that?
Who is I that?
Pulp Fiction. Have you seen Pulp Fiction?
Mm-hmm.
What's his name in that? He's the guy who... the fixer guy. He's in a bunch of Scorsese films. He's in National Treasure. He is the FBI guy.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
He's the FBI guy. Oh my gosh, yeah. You're so right. Wow, that's I did not crazy. Even place that. Wow.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay, Reservoir I could Dogs. Spend.
Yep, he was the guy in Taxi Driver. I mean, he's been in so much stuff.
Oh man, okay, yeah, I got you.
I could spend the rest of this podcast just talking about his tattoos. But I'm not gonna do that.
What's even more bizarre is, like, he was constantly, like, flexing different parts.
I know, he was
his
flexing
body
his
was
muscles
constantly. I thought I was losing my mind.
No, it was...
One of my favorite parts of that entire sequence was we're sitting here watching it, and it hit me. I was like, oh my god, his tattoos. And there was, like, a good 5-second beat, and Danielle went,
To be fair, since I'm marking this one explicit, I'm not as worried about saying this, but I was high while we were watching that movie. And
Squidward.
So I was very slow to catching certain things, but once I caught them, they killed me.
Yeah.
Like, it was
yeah.
so funny.
I'd love to watch this movie.
Oh my gosh. It was an experience. No, so there is something about his tattoos that I'll get into later that's in the fun facts that was just really cool.
They
but when you pointed them out, they were just straight up, like, drawn on with a pen. And they're so awful. They all look terrible.
And he's sitting there flexing them, trying to show off his tattoos,
oh my
and they're
gosh.
All terrible.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have an actor from... one of the most recent movies we did, Ed Norton as
awesome.
Inspector Hankels in this movie, which I did not recognize.
And with that a flawless German accent.
I was about to say that was when I realized when Ed Norton came in playing a German that everybody, Wes Anderson just had everybody use their natural accent.
Yep. Yep.
Nobody mm-hmm. did accents. Saoirse Ronan kept her Irish accent. Yep. Everybody had their natural accent.
Yeah, Ray Fiennes adjusted. There was something about it that
was both jarring and, like, really,
oh, I appreciated really it.
Cool. I thought it was extremely yeah. charming.
I thought it was great. Yeah. And Ray Fiennes, he used his normal accent, but he did, like, you know, take some like inspiration for his voice from like some older English comedic actor, like for timing and like and sort of like the up and down of it yeah. all. He kind of like took inspiration from that, but he did use his natural accent,
which is crazy. Seeing Ray Fiennes in a comedic role like this. You know, because I mean, I know him from obviously Voldemort. I know him from Kubo and the Two Strings. Like I know him from oh God, what was that one? Remember the Titans, the movie about the Titans,
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans. You know, remember the Clash of the Titans, the football movie about Greek mythology. you know, he was Hades in that. Like he's always like these like big scary people, and now he's just M. Gustav with.
If nothing else, he can command his space.
Yes.
And that's what Wes Anderson was looking for, was someone who just commands the space 100%.
Yeah. I'd sacrifice a lot for that man's career. Like the roles that he has played, they just look so fun. You know what I mean? Like all of the stuff that he does, it's like,
played this character was a very like flamboyant but so sexually proficient
yes.
character, and it yes. was so interesting to yes. me. There was a very funny line from Dimitri where he was like calling him gay or something or something like that, and he was like, I forget what the exact like interchange was, but it was something along the lines of like, what are you even talking about? And he was like, I've slept with I slept with that woman, like, yeah. and he's like, well, yeah, but you're bisexual, and he goes, how am I even supposed to feel about that?
Like, how is that supposed to make me feel? Or when he's in the God, this podcast is just us quoting the movie. Just watch the movie. No, when he's in the prison and he's just like, all right, Gustav, you're straight. You're one of us. He's like, I don't believe I've ever been given accused that. I've never been accused of that
before. Oh, and it was so good. Yeah, he was so flattered by it.
So funny.
That was the thing, is like, he's so uppity, but he's also so like willing to be flattered by right. other compliments and to pay people compliments. Yes. Like when he genuinely is like, yes. that is amazing. Like what you've just done. Like and just flatter them.
Don't flirt with her.
that was great. I love that.
And then is he flirting with you?
Yes.
Yes.
Don't flirt with her.
And then instantly Gustav's like, she has my respect.
Oh my gosh, no, that was great. But let me go in here. Okay, so Gustav has Zero place digging tools inside pastries. Made by Agatha, an apprentice awesome. Baker at Mendel's and Zero's fiance. Gustav and the others dig their way out and disperse.
That whole sequence of them escaping the prison was so hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
There was a bit, like, every time you thought all the bits were done, there was another bit. Yes. When they look down at the guards, and then one guy just pulls out the screwdriver and jumps down. And then him and the last guard stab each other at the same time.
And all the guards are dead.
You call that a draw. Yeah,
Oh my gosh, so good. Oh, it was so funny. But, they dig their way out. When Zero and Gustav are reunited, they set out to prove Gustav's innocence with the assistance of a fraternity of concierges, the Society of the Crossed Keys.
Yep.
Which is actually inspired by something real, which I will get into in the fun facts.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
They learn that Madame D had a missing second will, which would only take effect should she be murdered.
The second copy of the second will.
It was so funny.
The series
of
events in that dialogue was like, so wait, there was a second copy of the second will? Yes.
And again, so that good. Whole sequence of them going up to the monastery at the top of the mountain, God. And everybody,
are you Monsieur Gustav? switch with me. Are you Monsieur Gustave? Put these on. And then freaking so Willem Dafoe walking out with a censer.
He walks out with the thing of incense, and it's like it zooms in on him, and he like sees them, and then like runs out of the room, and he's like, he gets on skis, and it's a ski chase scene.
Remarkable.
Oh my gosh. And like, and it wasn't even meant to look good. Like, the scene where it's really wide with them looks terrible.
It looks like stop motion.
Well, because, like, so
what
it was
the filming technique they used for
it
that,
was made with miniature landscapes, and then they animated skiers onto it.
I thought that's what it was.
Yeah.
Because it looked, I couldn't place it. It looked kind of stop motion, of which Wes Anderson is very proficient.
Yeah.
Isle of Dogs. And,
I was going to say Isle of Dogs,
and Fantastic
yeah.
Mr. Fox, two of which I will be seeing within this week, because... Oh my god, I need to consume everything this man's done ever.
Yeah, it looked so bad, but I knew it was intentional. And then it flashes to like Zero speeding along after Willem Dafoe on these skis, which his shoes clicking into the skis made me so happy.
Yes.
He stepped in and it was like a whole thing where they went click, 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 like it, like on the fronts and the backs, and he just like skis off. Oh my gosh, it was so funny. I could not get over that scene.
They get Ralph Fiennes on the, or they get Gustav hanging on the cliff face, on this large cliff.
Oh my gosh. He comes up
and Willem Dafoe just starts stomping on the ice, getting ready to drop him off the cliff, and he starts reciting poetry. And Zero just runs up on him and pushes Willem off the cliff. He's like, he's going into this like really impassioned poetic speech. He's like, holy fuck, you got him!
And he's like, okay, pull me up. It was so funny.
He's ready to die giving poetry.
Yes.
And just the sheer shock of Willem Dafoe getting shoved off the cliff.
Oh my gosh, it got me so bad. That was so funny. And then, like, the theme of everyone trying to recite poetry throughout the movie and getting cut off. Again, fitting in with that, like, really uppity style, but being self-aware enough to know, like, let's cut to the next thing.
When they're in the courtyard, when they got arrested, or when he just escaped prison, and he starts going into to poetry, and Ralph Fiennes, he looks like he's about to start crying, and then the alarm starts going off, and he's like, I don't want to cut you off, but we have to go. The sirens are blaring.
But finish this later.
We're gonna pick this up later.
It was so good. I loved it. Oh my gosh, so genius. But so Dimitri's hired assassin, J.G. Jopling, trails their whereabouts, murdering Kovacs, Madame D's butler, Serge X, and Serge X's sister in his pursuit to kill Gustav. Following a chase, Zero pushes Jopling off a cliff to save Gustav, and the two men continue their escape from swarming Zabrowskin's troopers led by Hankels. Gustav, Zero, and Agatha arrive back at the Grand Budapest to find it converted into a military headquarters. Agatha sneaks in to retrieve Boy with Apple to sell, but is spotted with the painting by Dimitri. Gustav and Zero rush to save Agatha from harm as she flees from Dimitri. He shoots at them, initiating a confusing shootout.
The entire army is just shooting at each other for no reason whatsoever.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny. They all just come out and start shooting.
What? Stop.
Who's shooting at who?
Well, I'm shooting at them because they're this. We're running from him because of this.
All right, you're all under arrest.
Hankels stops the fight. Agatha's attempt to escape leaves her and Zero hanging from a balcony before safely falling into a van of pastries. Madame's second will, making Gustav the beneficiary of her fortune, is found attached to the back of Boy with Apple. He succeeds her as owner of the Grand Budapest Hotel and becomes one of the wealthiest Zabrowkins. He travels by train with the now wed Zero and Agatha to celebrate before encountering hostile soldiers that destroy Zero's refugee documents. Gustav tries to fend off the soldiers but is shot dead. Zero inherits his fortune and maintains the Grand Budapest in memory of Agatha, who died of flu with their infant son.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Grand Budapest Hotel.
This movie is about storytelling. This movie is about memories.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is about, I mean, the framing device that they use, I mean, you get lost in such a fun and engaging and incredible whimsical story that you when you stop to kind of digest what you just watched, it's Zero who wasn't ready to take on the Grand Budapest. So of course it went to complete shambles. But it wasn't even that he wasn't ready. He even said the time period, like the world that Gustav had lived in was long gone even before Gustav was born.
Yeah.
He was just keeping up the illusion that that world still existed.
Yeah.
And so Gustav's entire character is about preserving the memory of something that once was. He keeps the Budapest Hotel because he wants to keep the memory of Agatha. And it's this whole framing of like telling these stories, and the fact that such a rich and incredible story was told to a guy who sat on that story and didn't even write it until he was much, much older.
Yep.
For some random woman to then read the story and then get moved to go to the gravesite of the author specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, the author, the Jude Law character, not Zero or Monsieur Gustave. And their entire story has just been recontextualized for this, and it's just, oh my gosh, it's just so moving and incredible, and I just love this movie so much. It's so good.
So what would you guys rename this movie?
Perfect.
If you had to rename it something.
Classic modern day masterpiece.
I think I would just call it pure poetry.
That's good.
Z to A.
Nice.
Okay. Probably something like really ostentatious, kind of like the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, yada yada yada. It would probably be like, you know, the wonderful whimsical world of M. Gustav, and you know, and his compatriot Zero or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
something really, really, really long extra.
And just extra like that. I think we capture it pretty well.
Yeah,
the boy and his apple.
Oh, okay.
Boy with
boy with apple.
He really looks a lot like me when you think about it. I'm going to keep this forever and cherish it as it's always going to remind me of her.
Cut to bed scene.
Actually, you know what? I think we should sell it as it's worth. We could probably fence it on the black market for something to $1 to $2 million.
So, I went on Amazon. The general consensus is pretty good. 84% rated it 5 stars.
Yeah.
I have 1 positive review and 3 negative reviews because I couldn't pick which one I wanted to read.
Okay.
So, what do you guys want to hear first?
I want to hear the negative really badly.
I was going to say, let's hear the positive first and just get it over with and then hear the negative.
Let's do that then.
Sounds good. So, this is from GT, and this was in 2017, and it's titled A Masterpiece of Filmmaking.
Correct.
The Grand Budapest Hotel gets better with every viewing. I bought it before I saw it, trusting that Anderson had produced yet another masterpiece. My trust was not misplaced, but it took me several viewings to realize the full extent of his artistic accomplishment. I certainly enjoyed it the first time through. It is visually stunning and star-studded, but the subtle humor that permeates the movie initially eluded me. It wasn't until I watched it again several weeks later that the brilliance of the script became apparent, and I developed a deeper appreciation for the writing. It is not only hilarious, but it is also emotionally moving. Every time I watch it, I notice something new, and I look forward to the next time I can enjoy it. 5 stars.
Very good.
So, I have a few reviews. If you want me to read all of them, I will. One of them is kind of basic, you know, it's just like a basic negative review. The other two, one of them goes into religion, and one of them is titled Makes You Have Diarrhea.
I kind of want to hear all of them.
let's hear the two wild ones.
Okay. So this one is from a user called The Professor, and this was last year, and it's titled Vulgar Movie.
Shut up.
Although the storyline is interesting and very entertaining, and although I did begin to care about the characters and the charity shown among them, I finally had to turn it off because of its vulgarity. I will not offend the reader by describing the vulgarity, but you can find a description of it in 1 Corinthians 6, 9-10. Please do not view this movie because you will not be able to get the grievously offensive images out of your head. Incredible. 1 star.
Yep.
Dude,
that's interesting.
It killed me when I read that, and I was that's like, I gotta amazing. Pick that one. And then this one is from someone called Ricky. And this was in 2019, and it's titled, Makes You Have Diarrhea. This movie sucks. I'd rather paint my bedroom 10 times than to sit through this crap. I watched it sitting on my couch and it sucked. Then I watched it hanging upside down and it still sucked. What? Looks like an idiot savant film, and that's being generous. This movie should have been outlawed before the general public has had to see it.
What are they talking about?
Okay, so... this is where he just doesn't know how to write, so I'm just going to skip that sentence. So let's try this. I'm going to make a movie, and it will have no picture, just a black screen, and then just have voices. Would that make me a genius filmmaker? You people have screwed up artsy conditions that you must get help for. It is the most tragic thing that ever happened to me watching this movie, and as a matter of fact, I had diarrhea for 4 days after watching it. 1 star.
Whoever wrote that is 12 years old, and I'm not kidding. I actually think that's just some child trying to be like, I have a hot take no one's ever thought before. Excellent. Art is bad, and this is nothing like the Transformers movie.
And I'm sorry, but if you had diarrhea for 4 days after the movie, I think you might want to check and see if whatever you ate the day prior had food poisoning.
They just wanted to blame the movie instead of blaming their poor choices. Sorry,
but... those two do not coincide.
There is no correlation.
I think it's just a 12-year-old trying to be funny. Doing so, you've offended me greatly, and I will find you.
No. Yeah, those are the two wild ones, and then there was like a basic negative review, you know? Yeah.
The biggest criticism that I've seen about Wes Anderson is people like to say, like, and they say the same thing against Edgar Wright, excuse me. They say the same thing against Edgar Wright, which is also wrong and dumb, which they say style over substance, where the Edgar Wright and Wes Anderson are very, very stylistic directors. There's a very clear, the second you start watching it, you're like, ooh, yep, that's Edgar
Wright.
But there
is no lack of substance in this movie.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And that's what drives me nuts, is that people see this just absolutely beautiful, what is objectively art, and they go, oh, this is so much, this is too much, this is lacking, this is compromising.
No, the style
your substance.
Feeds the substance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's what people say against Wes Anderson and Edgar Wright, is it's style over substance, and that there's no meat there, even though you're wrong.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest criticism that I've seen in doing a little bit of research about this.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's just wrong though. So.
Yeah, you're allowed to have an incorrect opinion.
Yeah, you're allowed to be wrong. So what do you guys think that this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes?
And it's got to be really good. It's got to be like 92%.
I don't think so. I think that this movie is... So the thing about Wes Anderson and Edgar Wright is that when you have artsy movies like this, they do not do well in the box office. They kill it in the Academy Awards. Because they're
fantastic. But we're doing critical right now.
Oh, we are?
Critical. Yeah, this is critical.
We always start with critical.
Yeah, I knew that.
It's critical audience.
I was just setting up for my next answer. Yeah, it's got to be like 87 or something like that.
Okay.
It's probably really good.
I'm going to take an even swing and say just a solid 90%.
Samuel got it exactly. It is 92%.
Wow.
Exact.
Good.
Now for the audience score out of 100.
People don't know what they're talking about, so it's probably like a 84.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to guess like 78.
Okay.
I'm going to say 82.
All right, Tyler, you're closest. It is 86.
Okay.
So, good.
So it's a little better than
good
you
job,
thought.
Good job, people.
People have good taste.
Yeah, a little better than you thought. There you and go. IMDb out of 10.
8.4.
Okay.
8.2.
Okay.
I'll say 8.1.
You got it exactly, John. It is exactly 8.1.
Oh, wow. Very nice.
It's the first time it's ever happened.
First time it's ever happened.
I'm not really good at these guessing games.
So the budget for this movie was $25 million, and it made $172.9 million. So it made very good money, even from its very limited release, because it did
amazing.
Not have a full theatrical release.
I was about to say, I remember when it came out, I remember hearing about it all the time.
Yeah.
So
this actually had 9 Academy Award nominations, including for Best Picture and Best Director. That's it amazing. Won 4 Oscars, which was Best Original Score, Best Production Design, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, and Best Costume Design.
That's amazing.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
That's dope.
So I got some fun facts here. So the scene in which, Harvey Keitel says, yeah. "Good luck, kid," before slapping Zero across the face was shot 42 times until Wes Anderson was satisfied and he actually slapped him every time.
Oh my God.
Incredible.
That, and if I was an emerging actor who just got his breakout role in a Wes,
you let Harvey Keitel slap Anderson you in the
movie,
face.
Punch me in the mouth. I don't care. I don't care.
According to writer, producer, and director Wes Anderson, the cast stayed in the same hotel, the Hotel Bourse in Görlitz, Germany, during principal photography. Mm-hmm. He insisted all makeup and costume fittings happen in the hotel lobby to speed up filming. The owner of the hotel appeared in this movie as an extra working the front desk of the Grand Budapest Hotel, so after filming ended for the day, the crew often returned to find him at the front desk of their own hotel.
That's hilarious. That's awesome.
Yep.
Wow.
As an example of how important attention to detail is in movies, graphic designer Annie Atkins stated in interviews that they had created a prop notebook for M. Gustav to use. However, Fiennes immediately noticed that the notebook had no lines in it. After arguing that an organized and meticulous man as his character would always prefer lines to write on, the design department got him a notebook with lines. Atkins later stopped using this example when she learned that journalists had completely missed her point and were instead writing about Fiennes' alleged diva behavior on the set.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
I can't stand that.
I'm like, dude, he knows his character, yeah. And he's just requesting something his character would want. And they're like, he's a diva. It's like, no, he's just making, he's making a good point that his character would want that.
That's infuriating.
No. The erotic painting hung in place of Boy with mimics the style of the early 20th century Austrian painter Egon Schiele, and that was actually requested by Wes Anderson. He specifically said, "I want a painting in that style, and I want the title of it to be Two Lesbians Masturbating."
That's amazing.
And that's what he requested. It was created by illustrator Rich Pellegrino, a regular contributor to San Francisco, Rich California's Pellegrino? Annual Bad Dads exhibit of artwork.
What an amazing name.
Yeah, so that's what he requested, and that is what he got.
That's so funny.
That scene where Dimitri is like, "What is this?" and is like screaming and pointing at this obscene painting, and all the ladies are like playing cards, and they're just like, "I don't know, it's been there for a while.
Like, we thought you hid it away."
Yeah, we just thought like you just added it. He's like, "What?"
Every time they have a line, they all say it together.
I know, it was so good. Oh my gosh. But so when old Zero and the author sit at their dinner table, the flower vase has two flowers, a daffodil and a sprig of rosemary. According to floriography, which is the symbolism of flowers, the daffodil represents chivalry and the rosemary represents remembrance, both qualities shown by Zero in honoring his mentor and remembering his early life.
Wow.
I love that.
I thought that was awesome.
What did you say? A floriographer?
Floriography is the symbolism of flowers.
That's incredible.
The boy with apple painting appeared in several locations throughout the hotel and is hanging behind the front desk during the young writer's stay. It can also be seen on the back of the menu when Zero begins to tell his story. Wow. And the original is actually hanging in Wes Anderson's office in London.
Oh, that's cool.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that expensive?
No, no, just the original that they made for the movie. It still hangs there.
Okay, I see.
Ludwig's tattoos are a direct copy of the character of, and I'm going to butcher the name, Pere Jules in La Atlante from 1934. The MAV tattooed on his arm is the abbreviation of the French saying, I can't speak French, so it's Mort à Vache, which translates to death to cows, Vache being street slang for cops or policemen.
Oh my goodness.
The confessional booth scene between Gustav and Serge X was shot separately, and while Wes Anderson thought both actors did great work, they almost had to reshoot Fiennes' performance as the actor was so impressed by Amalric's turn, and he's quoted as saying, "If I had known he was going to do it that well, now I feel I need to do my part over again."
Wow.
Yeah. After escaping from prison, M. Gustav calls upon the services of the Society of the Crossed Keys, apparently a secret society of hotel concierges. There is an actual international society of hotel concierges,
so
Les Clefs d'Or, also known as the Golden Keys, where member concierges can seek assistance from their colleagues, although not for prison escapes. Members of this society wear lapel pins in the form of crossed keys, very similar to the ones worn by Gustav and his colleagues.
That's a real thing.
That's a real thing.
That's so cool.
Poetry is often recited throughout the film by the main characters. Every time someone tries to recite a poem, however, they are cut off, except at the end, when Agatha finishes hers, which is arguably the best of the lot, and it is the last time we see two of the characters before their deaths. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, during the shootout scene, if you stop the film, you can see that George Clooney is one of the shooters. He is in a white jacket.
Oh my God.
He's just there. Just there for it.
What? I love how all of Hollywood's, like, superstars are all like, oh yeah, man, if Wes Anderson's doing something, I want it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you see every movie that he does is just riddled with top talent.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Well, it's time to recast everybody. Oh, so, what would we play if we were cast in this?
I want to see you as Willem Dafoe.
Oh my, I accept.
John is Serge.
Absolutely Serge.
John is Serge.
Absolutely Serge.
Tyler's Dimitri.
Oh my gosh, you're so Dimitri. I feel like Samuel is Hankels.
Yes.
I think that's fair. Inspector Hankels. Absolutely. Yes. Any of us could be the cat as well. our new little game, what would be the drinking game for this movie? You have to come up with at least three rules.
Every time they quote poetry.
Okay, time they quote poetry. Let's see, every time they jump between, like, timelines. So every time they jump back to, like, them sitting at the table.
Oh, okay.
Every time Boy with Apple is mentioned.
Oh gosh, every time Boy with Apple is mentioned. Oh goodness.
And it's just it's not even a drinking game, it's just a fast way to die. A
fast way to get drunk.
That's hilarious.
So favorite and least favorite moments from this movie.
So my favorite moment is from pretty early on, but it's when they're talking to the police. It's the moment that I think all of us just completely gave in to the hilarity of the movie.
Yes.
And it's when Gustav is talking to the police and he's like, oh, she was murdered. And you think I did it. And then there's just a solid beat or two. And then he turns around and just sprints off.
We all died.
All the police follow him and it is the funniest thing.
I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't think they even give it a beat.
No, they do give it a beat. Yeah. He's standing there for a second. You think I did it. Beat. Run. It was so funny.
And this is literally after he gave Zero a whole monologue of like, alright, you know how to deal with police? Good.
And then he just runs.
Tears
he just ignores
the moment
it.
He's accused.
Oh my gosh.
What was your least favorite?
Does one exist?
I will freely say I don't have one. I don't have a least
favorite. I have
one,
but it's
moment.
Just my whole thing.
Is it them throwing the cat?
No, it's not them throwing the cat, actually.
I didn't love seeing the old lady give him a blowjob.
That was what I was going to say.
I loved that scene.
I have said before, and maybe not on the podcast, but I've said before, for me, I just am made so uncomfortable by, like, watching sex in movies, especially the more graphic it is. So watching it was a little tough for me, but luckily it was like 1 second. Even that, like me saying that was my least favorite, it didn't even like, I was still able to be like, wow, that was jarring and then like move on. But like, you know, if I had to pick a least favorite, that would be my least favorite.
Yeah. God, man. What is my favorite bit?
I'll say mine if you're still thinking.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
So mine is tied. I can't pick between the two. The sequence of getting punched in the face, punched in the face, punched in the face, punched in the face, punched in the face. Yeah. Willem Dafoe looks to camera like, yeah, like in this like really badass moment. And then Willem Dafoe getting shoved over Ralph Fiennes as he's like making his speech. And he's like, holy shit, you got him. Like those were by far the two moments that killed me the most. Those are definitely my two favorites.
If we can pick multiple, I would say the chase sequence where Willem Dafoe is chasing after oh my God, we're just saying his name. I'm just
Gustav?
No, the
Zero?
The lawyer. Friggin'
Kovacs.
Kovacs, thank you. Lord have mercy. When Willem Dafoe was chasing Kovacs, that entire chase sequence was gorgeous. Like the entire the framing of the museum. Even something small as 15 minutes till closing, and Willem Dafoe walks in, it's 14 minutes till closing. It's just like,
oh my gosh, that
was so funny. God,
man. It's like,
I died laughing on that.
It's
one.
Just
that
so
was
good.
So good.
And just that sequence was so good. And then the when they were in the snowy mountain and they were it was just like, are you Monsieur Gustave? Come with me. Are you Monsieur Gustave? Come with me. Put these robes on. Sing. And then, all right, confess. I didn't do it. No, go to the confessional. And then the Willem Dafoe, like that whole sequence was just magnificent. I do not have a least favorite point in the movie. It was just, God, man. Oh my
so
God.
So good.
Yeah.
John.
I'm much like Tyler. I don't think I can really give it like a, like, hard least favorite. Like, I just didn't like it, and like and I can't even argue for like narratively this didn't make sense. Like, I to my knowledge, I cannot recollect a moment in the film, but I will say probably my favorite portion is maybe because of the timing on my part, but Willem Dafoe petting the cat evilly in the corner just for me to clock it. Say, hey, look.
Point it out just in time for all of our eyes to shift to it.
And then literally just, whoop.
Chuck it out the window.
And I'm like, oh, it caught me off guard so bad. But in an honorable mention, and I have to give it to it, but Monsieur Chuck being the most out of place.
Owen Wilson.
Yes.
Thing. Because like, Monsieur and Chuck should not be in the same.
It was so good. Well, out of 10 soon-to-be dead cats, what would you rate this movie?
Does it 10, 15 if you take it. This is far and away my favorite movie I've seen in this podcast.
I mean, yeah, it's got to be. I think if it's not a 10, it's a 9.5. So
this was an
10.
Actual masterpiece.
Yeah, again, 10 yeeting cats.
Yeah.
It's comedic masterpiece. You have to see it.
I'm right there with y'all. Absolutely. It's a 10 out of 10. This is a fantastic movie. It is a comedic masterpiece. It is a just like, just from just a film basis, it's a masterpiece. I recommend anyone and everyone watch this movie. It does have, you know, obviously, like, you know, some graphic, like, sexual stuff. Like, there's, you know, the moment where he's getting a blowjob from an old woman. There's the painting of two women, like, making out and, like, fingering each other and all this shit. So, definitely not appropriate for children.
Nope.
Don't show this to your kids. But
unless
if you are
really, really comfortable with your kids.
I suggest no. But still, if you're an adult at all, I fully recommend this movie. This is a hilarious and heartwarming movie. It's just, it's great. And I fully recommend it.
Agreed.
Yeah, just a reminder, you can follow us on our Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at artists_mad. We are continuing with our Nether Deep stream with session Woo! 2. It will be out when this podcast is out, where you can see it. You can watch it on YouTube if you missed it on last night at 7. And you can listen to it. You can just look up the title Dice Box. That is what we are titling our D&D streaming channel.
Dice Box.
So if you prefer to just listen while you're at work, you can look it up on Spotify. And I'm going to figure out what's going on with Apple Podcasts, because it should be up, but it's been having some trouble. Mm. But it's definitely on Spotify. You can leave us a review wherever you're listening. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, or requests for us to review in the future, message our social media or email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com.
Yep.
I thought you were going to do something?
No, I'm just all
done. Okay, cool. And we will see you guys next week, continuing with our Star Wars series. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.